This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
If you or a loved one is struggling with drug or alcohol addiction and are serious about getting help, call us now at 855-820-2797. You can get clean and sober in as little as 7 days. Your insurance company may cover 100% of all costs with little to no out-of-pocket expenses. Our trained addiction specialists are available 24/7 and all calls are free and confidential. Just call us at 855-820-2797. How much longer are you going to suffer with addiction? Let us find you the best treatment center that fits your unique needs. Call us now at 855-820-2797.
Glenn Beck. The Blaze Radio Network.
Megan Phelps Roper, somebody that we saw on TED Talk, giving a great TED Talk on how to bring people together. She was in the she's a Phelps, so she was part of the founding family of the Westboro Baptist Church. And she got online and started making friends with people who were friendly to her, not just yelling at her all the time. And she said there are four things that if you really want to change people's minds, four ways of engaging people so that real conversations can take place. The first one is don't assume bad intent. Instead, assume good or neutral intent. The second, ask questions as opposed to accusing. Ask honest questions. It'll help people, let them know that they've been heard. And quite often, this is all that people want. The third is stay calm. Welcome back to the program, Megan. Explain stay calm.
So this one is really difficult because the natural inclination is always to respond the way that somebody is speaking to you. So if when somebody comes at you with hostility, the instinct is to be defensive and to respond with hostility. But that just brings the conversation to an end quickly. But if you can learn to step back, calm down, and try to diffuse the anger, and you can do it in a few ways. There were, you know, people who just, so for instance, I actually ended up marrying, my husband was one of these Twitter friends who started out as this angry, sort of insulting at first.
Wow.
We just got married 7 months ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. What he would do, for instance, he would tell a joke or recommend a book or start talking about music. He would sort of turn away from the hostility for a minute and then come back to it later. You don't necessarily, I mean, that can be a last resort. A lot of times, just staying calm and speaking as if you're addressing a friend and not somebody that you hate and that you despise, that you can't stand to hear their words. It helps so much to keep the conversation going.
Step four.
Step four is make the argument. And this one seems obvious, but there's this argument that seems to have taken hold on both the left and the right. And I think it stems from the hopelessness you mentioned earlier. Oh, they're just too far gone. They can't be reasoned with. But where does that lead us? It leaves us at loggerheads, deadlocked, and no one wants to be there. So you make the argument because they don't understand. Your opponent doesn't necessarily understand your thinking and the way that you're approaching the problem. And by making the argument, if you fail to do that, you're definitely not going to change someone's mind. You actually have to articulate the reasoning and the thought process behind your position. And there's actually a fifth point that I would have included if I had enough time. Should I tell you now?
Yeah, go.
We're breaking news here. The fifth point in Megan Phelps' TED Talk.
Go ahead.
it's take heart. Changing hearts and minds is incremental work. And it takes patience and persistence, and you're not going to see results necessarily immediately, not right away. But we can't give up, and you might not be the person to persuade somebody else to turn away from a bad position, but every interaction is an opportunity to help turn the tide. So stay the course, trust the process, and take heart.
How many people were like this to you?
Well, the ones who had the biggest impact, a handful who were engaging me continually over the course of a couple of years. Mm. But considering I'd been in the church, I'd been raised in this, and I was 24 when I got on Twitter. So I was, again, marinating in this ideology, in this way of thinking. And so the fact that it only took a couple of years to really, you know, affect me and affect how I saw things, I think that's pretty remarkable.
So did your husband, was there a time when your husband, who now is now your husband,
yeah,
was he falling in love with you at the time? Did that happen later? Did he say, I can't believe I'm saying this to you? I mean, how did that happen?
Well, it was a really strange dynamic, because obviously I was at the church, and at Westboro, you could only marry somebody who's in the church. So we were having these discussions, and there was nothing, it was like a Jane Austen novel, like nothing overt. Like, we couldn't say how we were feeling to each other, because that it just wasn't acceptable. And he sensed that. But he also, again, saw that I was a human being, and he came to believe that I had a good heart.
So would this have worked without love?
So here's the thing. I believe so. And the reason is that the very first interaction was with a friend. I mentioned him in the talk too, Julicious. His mm-hmm. name's David Abbott Ball. I think I was talking with him for a little over a year. He's asking these questions. And in the course of asking these questions, he was the one who found the first bit of internal inconsistency in Westboro's doctrines. And when I look back at how I responded to that, so my husband, I didn't actually start speaking to him for months after that. But when I think about how I responded to that first bit of internal inconsistency, that was when I first started to challenge, in my own mind, Westboro's doctrines.
And you didn't let him know that.
No, for sure. As soon as he made that point, I was actually terrified to speak to him again. I didn't even let on that I recognized that he was right. I just stopped speaking to him.
What was the point, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, yeah. No, not at all. It was a sign that we had that said death penalty for fags.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah. Mm. So, of course, we use, you know, the verses in Leviticus and then also in Romans 1 that talk about how, you know, gays are worthy of death. And he brought up, so he's Jewish, I was really surprised that he brought up Jesus saying, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. And I just had never connected that was talking about the death penalty. And we thought, we're not casting stones, we're just preaching words. And David said, yeah, but you're advocating that the government cast stones. And so when I brought that point to other members of the church, the response was just to double down. They never addressed the passage that, you know, that contradicted us. They just reiterated the passages that supported us. And so that was the first time that, and the way that I reconciled it in my own mind was I just stopped holding the sign because I didn't know how to defend it anymore, and I didn't believe it.
Did they tell you to stop talking to these people?
I don't think people quite realized how much, I mean, they knew I was very active on Twitter, but I don't think they realized how much it was affecting the way that I was thinking. And I honestly didn't understand it either, because in my mind, I think I was in denial about it, because you are not supposed to be impacted by other people. You are not supposed to be anything but preaching to them. You're not supposed to really, you know, care. I was going to say care about them. It's a very strange dynamic, but I was in denial about it, and I think that definitely helped it seem to others as if it wasn't really having an impact on me also.
Is anybody in your family speaking with you? Do you have a relationship with anybody anymore in the family?
Not anybody in the church, no. But there has been, over the last decade or so, about 20 or so people who have either left or been kicked out of Westboro. And my brother actually, with the morning of my high school graduation, he's a year and a half older than me, we woke up and went downstairs and all of his stuff was gone. And so I didn't get to speak with him for the 8.5 years between when he left and when I left. But now we're really good friends and he's wonderful.
What was he thrown out for?
No, he left, actually.
Oh, he left on his own. Okay.
Yeah, at 19. Yeah, he also had scriptural objections to some things, and also just the extreme, he objected to the extreme level of control, because everybody in the church, we all lived within two blocks or so of one another, and did everything together, and were, you know, not obviously developing relationships with people outside, but the level of control is really, really, really extreme.
Do they do you think this will just die out as the family dies out, or?
I thought about this. My sister and I would talk about this, about how could the church end in a way that didn't just destroy everybody, you know, on the inside. There's still about the same level of membership as there has been, because a few new converts have joined, and then of course my generation is now they're having kids, but there's not many.
What kind of people join this? They really believe it? The newcomers that came in, were they?
It's one thing to be raised in it, but to be converted as an adult.
Decent
is,
people?
Wow.
Yeah. I've speculated about this too. So for instance, my dad joined the church long before the picketing started. He was only 16 at the time. And, you know, his family wasn't, his mom had been divorced, and I don't think he was attracted to the love and unity and connection, I think, in my family. In the Phelps family, I mean. And I think that's a draw for some people. And it really lends credence to the idea that they're doing what they're doing out of love, out of, you know, good intentions. And again, some people just, I think, are drawn to that, the sense of the idea of having all the answers and knowing for sure what you believe and how you're supposed to live. Like, it's, that was such a powerful thing. And when I left and realized, like, I don't have that anymore. I don't have that sense of, it's a very comforting sense of certainty and, you know, nuance and questions and uncertainty are a lot more difficult to deal with. So I think some people are attracted to that part of the church.
Next time they're out protesting, what should people do?
I think engaging at protests is actually not a very effective thing, because they're on picket lines. They are already in these attack, defend mindsets. Mm-hmm. I think the internet is a much, you know, Twitter. There's a lot of them on Twitter now. I think that's a more effective way of engaging. But if you do see them, and if you are moved to go and speak to them, just remember that responding with, you know, yelling and name calling, all those things, it just reinforces what they already believe. It's adding to, you know, their certainty that they're doing the right thing.
It's really great to talk to you. Megan Phelps Roper, you can find her at Megan Phelps. It's her Twitter handle, at Megan Phelps. Really great to talk to you, and thank you for sharing this. And I think you have an important voice that needs to be heard.
And I will say, Megan, would you confirm this? Because we got the fifth point out of you, we are 25% better than your TED Talk.
yeah, for sure. Okay.
Megan, can we ask you, can we pay you an offhanded compliment? Stu wanted to say this. We said it in the break. And it's weird because it is exactly what we're talking about. We don't know each other. We don't talk to each other. We look at people in the Westboro Baptist Church and think that their kids just must be dumb as a box of rocks and just oatmeal. Every answer is oatmeal. And you're so articulate. I mean, it's amazing to have that view shattered.
Thank you. I will say, I mean, another thing that's not so well known about the church, their education was really important in my family. Most of the people there, I mean, many lawyers, people who work in healthcare and IT, and they're very well educated, which is partly, I think, what makes it so much more difficult for them to see outside of it. This is a psychological thing where by having these very strong, mostly internally consistent arguments, they think they're so certain that they don't even question the We don't even question it.
Amazing.
But yeah, anyway.
Thank you so much. At Megan Phelps. Thank you so much, Megan. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You bet.
Glenn Beck, The Blaze Radio Network.
Hey, I want to talk to you a little bit about the trouble that I have sometimes with my son and my daughter. They love the internet, as I do. The internet is an incredible resource, educational, social, recreational. It's all good, except it's not all good. Some of it is real bad, and it can show up on your kid's screen when you least expect it. So how do you as a parent handle it? I want to tell you about Hero Parental Control. It's the most comprehensive family internet solution available, and the activity from all of your family's devices can be filtered, can be monitored, and even tracked via GPS from a dashboard on your phone or your iPad. Material that may be healthy for a teen can be harmful to a young child, and so you need to have the perfect protection level from toddler to teen to mom and dad. One of the most important steps to a safer internet in your home is recognizing this is a really big issue. Hero gives you the power to create a protected and nurturing online environment. There's nothing like it. Try Hero. Block the bad. Choose what's good for your family. Visit blazehero.com. That's blazehero.com.